So my heart's a little heavy. I was going to talk about sex tonight, which is one of the probably least talked about topics in insight meditation groups that I've found. If you go on the Dharma Seed app, there are these things called, you know, Dharma Talks, which is essentially what I'm going to attempt to give. And there's this app that's populated by a lot of Dharma Talks from teachers all around the world. And if you go and you type in sex to the little search bar, there's maybe like 5 or 6 talks on sex. If you talk, you know, type in joy or suffering or any of these other, you probably find hundreds, maybe even thousands of talks. But maybe we'll postpone that because I've been talking to community members here. I've spent some time at the Black Lives Matter protest on Friday. And looking at social media, and the sense that I get is that there's a lot of emotional shock, of grief, of anger, maybe even apathy, indifference, due to the violence, the different levels of violence, the different levels of oppression, bombings in Baghdad, shooting in Orlando, the continued murder of people of color by police officers in this country. And I'm kind of here, I'm wanting to acknowledge a little bit that I'm in a position of power and just having a voice right now in this community. And I'm called to share about engaged Buddhist practice, about the Dharma. You know, and how we look at things like oppression and violence in the world. My tendency almost is to want to not have to do this, not have to deal with this, not have to hear more about all of this shit, right? To get a break. Can I even go to the meditation group without hearing, you know, more about all of this stuff? You know, but the Buddha was really clear in his teaching that actually we don't get a break from human suffering until we confront human suffering. The Dharma is what the Buddha taught. Can be translated as the way things are. So we're really waking up to present conditions. Right now, this is the way things are. And we have a responsibility, I feel like, as a community to take a stand for awakening, to waking up to the way things are. To making that a part of the reality of what we're willing to look at as a Buddhist group that stands for non-harming, that stands for non-violence, that stands for the freedom and liberation of all beings, that all beings have the potential to liberate and awaken the heart from suffering. And I also, just before I talk more, want to acknowledge a little bit that I am I'm in a privileged position as well, because I don't identify with queer groups. I don't identify with groups of people of color. I don't have to actually be exposed to the level of oppression that is consistent and very clearly a part of our world. And the request that I would make is, no matter our political stance or our beliefs and views, you know, the Buddha said that the main cause of human suffering is fixing to views. Right? Fixed views. Clinging to fixed views. And so when I cling and when I go to the defense and when I go to the you know, my beliefs, my political opinions, and where I stand, it's hard to be open, it's hard to be receptive, it's hard to change. And tonight I'm going to speak only from a limited perspective of the path. And what it means to confront suffering on a collective level, this idea of engaged Buddhism. The Buddha said this dharma, so the reality of the way things are, this waking up to the reality of the way things are, this dharma I have reached is deep, hard to see, difficult to awaken to, quiet and excellent, not confined by thought, subtle and sensed by the wise. And what we're waking up to, what this path of awakening is waking up to, is we're waking up to human suffering and the causes of human suffering. And we're opening that, and then we're responding. We're moving towards, we're embracing, and we're feeling into that suffering. Carl Jung talked a lot about the shadow side of the human experience, and so we're actually going into the shadow and right uncovering a lot of times what we don't want to uncover. Because it's what's in the shadows, what I don't want to confront, what I don't want to uncover, that gets in the way of my well-being. These deeply conditioned patterns, you know, these even just from the most simple forms of the ways that expectations and perfectionism and incessant planning and comparing and judging and self-criticizing, these patterns, these internal patterns, in this case, that are alive and well whether I choose to confront them or not. Dharma practice is oftentimes, it's more of a subtractive practice than an additive practice, meaning that I'm really looking at exposing what's getting in the way of my well-being, right? Rather than trying to get or to do something to increase my well-being. It's a lot of confronting and seeing clearly into what causes and conditions are getting in the way of my ease, what's getting in the way of my peace of mind, you know? Seeing clearly, and then the other wing of practice is seeing clearly, or this wisdom factor, and then responding wisely, or this compassion factor, which is an opening, it's a turning towards, it's an embracing what's in the shadow. It's a caring for. You know, it's looking at the friction, the bumpiness. As the Buddha talked about this word dukkha, or this stress, this instability of life, this you know, on an existential level, we have birth, aging, sickness, death. We have the inherent stressors that all human beings from every walk of life come into contact with. We have just the stress of being alive, knowing that our time is limited, and then getting older and falling ill, and used to have a body that was not ill, and now I do have a body that is ill, and I'm going to pass, and my loved ones will pass. We have the stress of mental distress, of the ruminating, the worrying, the anxieties, the depression, the and then we have the situational distress of just the change that comes about that's inherent in life. I had a job and lost a job. I had a partner and lost a partner. The things that come and go out of our day-to-day life, the actual situations. And that all of us, we have to confront in our lives, we have to live with this, these ups and downs. Etiologically, this word dukkha, one of the ways that I like that it's described is this innate sense of feeling separate from the other. Sense of insecurity, a sense of not being able to quite find and locate and pin down comfort. No matter how hard I try to organize the conditions in my life to just be good and then leave me alone life, I'm done. Life continues to be stressful, challenging, changing. Right? This innate sense of lack of security. In some ways, this can almost be like an existential loneliness, that I, this feeling of that I am alone in this. Or this lack of security. And I think a lot of times, like, what does my mind hate more than anything? Is always its uncertainty. Right? Like, you can tell me bad news, and that's good enough. Like, good news, bad news, just tell me some fucking news, right? I just want some of the news. I want to know. I want certainty. I want security. I want to know I'm safe. I want to know I'm loved. I want to know that I'm a part of. And I even think of like this, these polls that they do of like the greatest fear that we can come up with as a human species is public speaking, right? Not even death, like the big one. It's like, no, I'm afraid to speak in front of other people, right? This fear of losing face, of like if I'm, of losing face, of being disconnected, of being embarrassed. Right, and then I won't be loved, or I won't have connection, or I'll be thought less of. This feeling of separateness that haunts us, and I feel like is really ingrained into the fabric of this, like, almost delusion that I am so different than you. This lack of security, this feeling of separateness, it creates this like craving, this need, this want to identify with roles, to identify, you know, this is even one of the big things in our culture of like, who are you, getting to know yourself. We say this a lot of times about people in their early 20s. Oh, he's just getting to know himself. Who are you, right? Craving to find an identity, to fix ourselves to identity, to find a role. I mean, one of the biggest roles we have is our career. You know, you sit next to someone on an airplane, you can't help this conversation, like, what do? Who are you, right? We want to know, who are you? Right, and so we have this, and we posture ourselves against the world to create this sense of identity. And then when we're in times of transition, these are usually the hardest times in our lives. I sponsor a lot of people and mentor a lot of people and talk to a lot of people, and it's always during these times of transition where they're coming out of school or out of a big role or they're out of a relationship or whatever, where we completely don't know who we are now, that this crisis or this feeling of separateness comes to the forefront, this lack of security. And we're convinced that, I am at least, during these times, that I'm doing something wrong. Right? And so then I try to posture myself or position myself in a way where I can have identity, where I can have meaning and role. And in this posturing, we participate in these patterns of comparing, of judging, of criticizing ourselves, of marking ourselves and positioning ourselves against the other. And this is where we get this dichotomy of self and other, where we have some idealized view of where we're supposed to be or where we're supposed to belong, and if we're not there, then what are we? And if we have a position and we have a privileged position, we like our position, it's only inherent that we will defend it. We have to try to hold on to our position, and the problem is that our position, our identity, our beliefs and views about the world are strongly conditioned in the social, political, and cultural world that we're born into. So there's this, you know, really individual, oh, I can see this separate and other, and the sense of judging and comparing and trying to figure out my progress and where I belong in the world. But there's also all of this social conditioning around our identities and our roles. And along with that comes a lot of dynamics. Comes, with subordinate and dominant dynamics about the norms, the self and the other. We live in a karmic field, as we would say from this Buddhist perspective, meaning not this like multi-life perspective, just this field of causes and conditions. We're actually born into a place in time and space. And we take on the conditioning of that time and place, and we very rarely consider the larger picture of what we're born into. Right, and so we do all this work trying to awaken on our own and to recover and to feel good and to feel at ease, but there's conditions that that are subtle and subversive and a part of our culture and social dynamic that continue to oppress or continue to cause suffering, if not for ourselves, for others. Class structures, gender structures, race structures, there's subordinate and dominant dynamics around sexual orientation. Yeah, gay people in this country may be able to marry and adopt kids now, but it's not the norm, right? It's other than the norm from which the whole culture has been exposed to. I want to read a quote from an author, a guy named Chris Crass. His book's called Toward Collective Liberation. He says, "My educational experience was often challenging. I grew up believing that I was a lone individual on a linear path with no past. History was a set of dates and events that, while interesting to learn, had little to no relationship to my life. I was just a person doing my own thing. Then I started to learn that being white, male, middle class, able-bodied, mostly heterosexual, and a citizen of the United States meant that I not only had privileges, but those privileges were rooted in history. I was part of social categories embedded in and shaped by history. Part of being in these groups means being normal, that standard by which all others are judged. My images of being my own person, however, are now joined by images of slave ships, indigenous communities burned to the ground, families destroyed, violence against women, and white ruling class men using white poor men to colonize people of color and earth." And the good news is the Dharma on the individual level affords us the opportunity to confront our own patterns of what's causing stress, what's getting in the way of my well-being. Right? I'm able to be present with and to observe and to start to care for myself, my suffering, my pain, to meet it, to confront it, to open, to move towards it. And the bad news is that the more that I continue to stay committed to practice, the more that I am being asked to open to. The more of the shadow that I'm being asked to confront. And part of this is awakening to the reality that your suffering is actually my suffering. I feel like at a point in Buddhist practice on the path is that, you know, service becomes this vow of the Bodhisattva and other traditions of being of service, of vowing to not end my own suffering until the suffering of all beings has been ended. Right? It really starts to resonate to be this understanding that I cannot awaken alone. There's this African proverb. They say, "If you want to go far, go. If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together." Right? And the Buddha really emphasized and saw this refuge, this taking refuge in sangha or community. As one of the essential, one of the most important ways in which we wake up is together. Right? Being a hermit in a cage, sitting alone, meditating, develop a lot of concentration, have to deal with the bullshit, right? But a lot of the shadows that come out in communication and community with other people won't be exposed. You know, all is good and well until I open my mouth, right? Until I have to deal with other people. You know, and so if we want to wake up, I feel like we have to confront this separateness, and we have to ask our, you know, community members, our friends, even the people we don't like, we have to ask them, what is your reality? What is your reality? And get away from this ultimate, I know the way things are, this bias that is born into having a nervous system and a singular body and brain. It's like I have this sense, this feeling that I'm right. I'm speaking for myself. I do most of the time have this sense that, nope, I kind of know the way things are, right? It's almost arrogance. And as we start to confront separateness, as we start to look at these things and actually say, oh, okay, what about what's happening in the world? What about this type of violence? What about these oppressed groups of people? Or, you know, what about what I see in the news and politics and what I'm seeing in the community? Is that usually it actually really quickly becomes very overwhelming. As we start to confront these bigger scales of oppression, of suffering, it feels, and I'm always first inclined towards apathy, right? Overwhelm creates a sense of there's nothing I can do. I'll put it back in the shadow. I'll put it down. We start to confront fragility of our heart. And taking refuge in the Dharma means that having some confidence and some faith that I have a heart that's big enough to hold what's fragile, or to hold what's confusing, or to hold what's overwhelming. And being willing just to ask more questions than having answers. Like, not even needing to take up even the stance that I started the talk with, of just being able to ask more questions of, you know, what if I considered. This not knowing is good. This is what we were talking about earlier, beginner's mind of coming to every situation, not every situation, but doing the best we can to come as a beginner, not an expert. But the dichotomy here is that this not knowing can turn into the, I don't know, the apathetic, I don't know. I don't know, so I'm not going to ask, I'm not going to inquire, I'm not going to engage. It can become this passive escape. Another one of these escapes can be into this. This is very common in Buddhist communities, this escape through interconnectedness. We're all the same, we're all equal. Ultimately is a truth, it's true. There's this, you know, that the human experience is a shared experience, that my pain is your pain, that we are all interconnected, but that we're waking up to the Dharma, which is the way things are, and the conditions are showing that we're not all treated equal. So we have to, in order to free ourselves from suffering, confront the conditions that create suffering. We have to do the work of going through the storm, not bypassing the storm and outsmarting the suffering and saying, no, we're all the same here. All is good over here. And so what to do? I mean, I don't really know. I mean, I think first and foremost is just to listen and step back. Same thing we do when we sit is to check in, to say, how is it now, right, with mindfulness? How is this? What is this? How is this? What is this like? What does this feel like? What are my attitudes, thoughts, feelings, emotions around this now? What is it like? And to stop and to listen, to be curious, to come with that beginner's mind of, you know, what is this like? We sometimes feel this pressure like we have to start big, like there's some, like I need to act and organize, right? Like there's like, well, what is little old me supposed to do? And I really think that just starting with intention, this is the cornerstone of Buddhist practice, like was talked about at the beginning, is setting this intention even to put aside the plans and the worries and the stressors for the day for this period of time. That intention helps keep us on track. And so just setting the intention to be engaged and to be curious and to be looking at these systems of self and other, of separateness, the way that insecurities take part, the way that defensiveness comes up, the way that we resist. I also would say another thing to do is to challenge one's own beliefs and views by being friends with people that share different views than you do. Right? There's this story, some of y'all may actually know this guy, there's a spiritual guru, a guy named Gurdjieff, back I think like in the 70s or 60s, 70s, and I believe, I remember the story right, he was living, or they had a community in France of, you know, it's like a commune, a community, an intentional community, and Gurdjieff was traveling, he's a spiritual guru, so he would go around and travel to different places, and they had this democratic process, you know, where everyone could be heard and have a say. And there was this really, really, really irritating person in their community that was always just, you know, is one of these people, you know, these people that always is the devil's advocate. It's like no matter what you say, they have the opposite view. You know, it's just like constant, constant irritability. And so while Gurdjieff was gone, they voted this guy off the island. They're like, you got to get out of here. We took a vote. Majority wins. See ya. Right? And so he left and he moved, you know, he moved to wherever his country of origin was. And Gurdjieff came back and he was so disappointed. He went and found the guy. And the guy was all apologetic. And he said, I'm so sorry. You know I'm just a pain in the ass and I can be that way. And he said, I will pay you to come back to the community. Right? Because we need, I feel like this is such an important thing, is we need to share space with people that challenge our views. To try more conflict. I think more conflict can be a good thing. And to even start to challenge those views, right? To be in relationship with people that are different, and then to discuss. Why do you believe that? What made you believe that? I don't see that at all. I don't see things that way. Right? And then we can also get involved. We can get involved through our Buddhist communities. We can get involved through our social communities. We can even simply listen to podcasts, right? Read books on these social dynamics. To consider this larger view. And if we're doing this work, I always encourage to create a space of calling people into the space instead of calling people out. Our tendency is, no matter what end of the spectrum, to be the most socially conscious white person in the group and to call out other white people on privilege, and you see this a whole lot in dynamics, like to be the most vegan of all vegans, to be the most nonviolent of all nonviolent people. Right? And we can create this self and other through spiritual materialism. It's like through that view, and that's the same thing. So how do we call people into discussion? How do we start to just have more of the discussion instead of the waving the finger, right? So I'm mostly more curious than anything to hear, you know, and to have some space, like what's been going on in your mind? What are your thoughts? You know, this is some time to share some of that together. Thank you. The floor is open.